Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Impact Vest podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. I'm Aisha Williams, the founder and CEO of Impact Vest, and along with our guest host, we aim to inspire and motivate towards collective positive global impact to solve our world's most pressing challenges in sustainability. With each episode, we will engage in insightful conversations with global changemakers, visionaries, and sustainability activists who wish to build a more sustainable and resilient future. Join us now as we create the future of impact.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Impact Vest podcast. I am Tanya Love Lamort, the Managing Director of the Impact Vest Alliance. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Saxon Knight, the founder of House of Saxons, a strategic consulting company. Welcome to our podcast, Saxon.
Thank you so much, Tanya. It's great to be here.
So will you tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself, your background, your experiences, who you are, so we can get to know you?
Sure. I spent the past 20 years focusing on threat intelligence and adversary analysis, both in the physical security and cybersecurity arenas. I actually began my career in the U.S. government intelligence community shortly after 9/11, focused on energy security and counterterrorism. So intelligence analysis and threat and risk mitigation really kind of became my areas of expertise, which I continued to use when I transitioned over into the cybersecurity space about 10 years in. After my time in government working for multiple intelligence agencies, I worked on Wall Street and Big Four consulting to design cyber threat intelligence programs. And most recently, I served as the director of threat prevention for LinkedIn and the director of risk intelligence for Meta Facebook. My kind of special sauce is over the horizon strategic planning with an eye towards threat interdiction and risk mitigation. I also help companies navigate sort of new and emerging technologies. AI is a great example of this, helping companies apply these emerging technologies to their existing business processes.
With such an base, first off, I would just want to say this, very inspiring, your background, but with such a vast background that you have, what inspired you to pivot and become the founder of House of Saxons? And how do you serve your clients?
Yeah, thank you. After 20 years, like I said, in the intelligence and cybersecurity arena, at the same moment that the women's equality conversation truly took hold in our culture, I encountered the reality of domestic trafficking. This was something that I hadn't really considered before as a woman. And having spent decades defending against very advanced, very persistent adversaries, I immediately wanted to find a way to make a meaningful impact for women who lacked both a voice and also a choice. What I discovered in my research were two really kind of surprising realities that inspired me to start House of Saxons. The first was that the main focus of combating trafficking is very, very tip of the spear. So a lot of the NGOs that you'll come across, a lot of the nonprofits are focused on immediate rescues, immediate housing, shelter, medical services, legal services, but there was not a large community focused on what I call aftercare, meaning the skills training, the career preparedness, business readiness. The second thing that struck me that's very related, in my opinion, is that there's an extremely high number of survivors. We're talking like 80% that return to a trafficking situation voluntarily. This is usually due to financial instability, psychological trauma, lack of routine. But the really, I would say, pernicious reason is that a lot of these, and I'll say women, they're obviously men involved in trafficking and children as well. But my focus for House of Saxons has been mostly women. A lot of the sort of more pernicious reasons is that these women don't have the skills needed to transition into a job or a career that has lasting impact. So this is really how the House of Saxons mission was born. By the way, my name Saxon means fighting warrior. And that's something that really has helped me in a lot of kind of dark times in my life. And I use my name because I do feel like it's an important reminder that to survive a trafficking situation makes you are absolutely a fighting warrior. So I wanted to serve these survivors in a moment when they have left or escaped or been rescued from their trafficking situation, and equip them with highly transferable business skills that would help them launch careers and thrive instead of merely survive.
And you definitely have the best name to start the House of Saxons for
Thank
sure.
You.
And what you're doing is just phenomenal as well. So what can you elaborate a little bit on your passion for intergenerational social impact and empowering women through their career coaching like you were talking about? But how can you just elaborate a little bit on your passion and the social impact that you're doing as well?
Yeah, I love that you brought up the intergenerational piece, because that's, again, for me, something that I don't see being talked about very much within this sector. I'm drawing on my experience defending against what I mentioned before, these advanced and persistent adversaries for 20 years. I have experienced firsthand the feeling of elation, I will say, when you net a terrorist or a hacker. And that feeling lasts a few days or hours until the reality sets in that there's always a person waiting in the wings to take that person's place. What that means to me is that the most powerful tool in our arsenal to combat trafficking and the exploitation of human lives long-term is education and awareness. A lot of times we sort of feel like education and awareness comes last, but making people aware of the realities surrounding trafficking, especially domestically, where we as an American culture don't talk about this very often, not only protects people from being enticed into these situations, but it also empowers people like you and I to change, to actually make meaningful change. So in terms of what we're providing survivors, we're providing scholarship-funded business education courses in topics that, you know, include what I would call power skills. These are things that every woman needs to succeed in life, no matter what your background or your experience. Things like building self-esteem, financial literacy, resume and interview preparation, business etiquette, things like that. The goal really is to fill that gap I identified by serving survivors in a very unique and life-changing way. But the skills that we're providing aren't just sort of a day in the life or a one-time thing. These really are building a launch pad that these survivors can use to launch a meaningful and sustainable career and avoid that re-exploitation cycle that I mentioned earlier.
Right. And the building blocks of creating this environment for education is key, because it's something that once you have the life skills, it is a building block. You're building on one block after the other as you grow and develop and as you learn more. So
exactly.
You talked about AI and how, you know, things are moving in that direction. Can you tell me what you foresee as future trends around cybersecurity and AI and how it's developing?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I have been talking about for years, and I'm so thrilled that AI has become so ubiquitous and so much a part of our modern culture as of, you know, this past year, is that AI is such an amazing tool for automating low-level processes. So when I would run teams of threat analysts, I'd have, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 people globally who were doing threat intelligence analysis every day, day in, day out. But the real, you know, the pre-work that comes before you're actually analyzing data is figuring out what is signal and what is noise. And what that means is you're getting all of this input, right? All of these different indicators. And you're trying to figure out what trail should I follow? What's junk mail and what is my, you know, phone bill? Like I need
right.
to pay. And so really helping, AI is such an amazing tool for helping processes to become faster, more efficient, and more, you know, I would say even more effective, because the processes are regulated by AI. There's a lot of human error. Like, let's be honest, there's a lot of human error that goes into things like discerning what is signal and what is noise. What should I follow? What's not worth my time? So I do think that AI, you know, the sort of the hype and the fear factor around AI is quite misguided, actually. Mm-hmm. I think AI can be a fantastic tool for automating processes that take humans a very, very long time, or that are prone to, you know, mistakes. So I do think that AI has this unbelievable future for us. And I don't think that corporations should look at it as like, you know, are my jobs being taken over? Is my you know, worth and value being
right.
usurped? What I see in AI is something that is extremely positive because of this potential for automating not just low-level processes, but very, very large, you know, data sets if you're trying to analyze data sets. The one thing that people, I think, forget about AI is, number one, there are humans behind AI, just like yes. in cybersecurity, right? There's always right. a human behind the keyboard. There's always an adversary, a real living, breathing adversary in cybersecurity. And the same is true in AI, right? These models are not built by robots. They're built by right. humans. The data that's fed to these models is fed by humans. The second thing that I think people forget about that is so tactile and important is that AI is it's a tool, but it's never going to replace the instinctual correlation skills that humans have and that they build through experience. There's a reason that you would go to, somebody who's your elder for wisdom and not to right. somebody who's, a 12-year-old or a teenager yes. or whatever, because they've experienced life and they have this sort of unspoken ability to connect dots and make inferences based on years and years and years of experience. Now, large language models will get there with years right. and years and years of experience, but I think people do forget that initially it's garbage in, garbage out, great data in, great output. So you've really got to remember that an AI model and an AI output is only as good as the data it's being fed. Whereas as humans, we get wiser and wiser and wiser, right. over time through experience. So that's what I sort of foresee with AI. From a cybersecurity perspective, my time working for two of the largest social media platforms on the planet, LinkedIn and Facebook or Meta, was really, really instructive for me, because something I think about a lot within cybersecurity is the juxtaposition between security and privacy. Mm-hmm. And the fact that as humans, as users, we generally want both.
Right.
We want to be totally secure, but we also want complete privacy. And right. almost every time, that's an impossible balance to strike. And so especially with social media, a lot of the conversations that we've been having around protecting our kids online, I think there's a real conversation that needs to happen culturally as it's starting to happen. I would say with AI, the cultural conversation is more around legislation and policy. Mm-hmm. I think in cybersecurity, the cultural conversation that I foresee happening is people just having to decide, am I going to err on the side of privacy or am I going to err on the side of security? Mm-hmm. And having to live with the consequences, because there are very dire and very strong lasting consequences to both decisions. And neither is wrong, but you just have to be willing to live with, right. with whatever it is that you choose. So those are kind of the two trends that I see down the road in cybersecurity and AI.
Okay. And where do you see the future of House of Saxon going? How would you describe your future?
So it's been interesting building out the curriculum. As I build this curriculum, I talked a little bit, or I think I mentioned power skills. Like, I don't really call what we're teaching soft skills, because that I think is such a misnomer for what these skills are. There are highly technical, sort of hard skills that people are learning, but when I look back at my own career, or when I look at, luminaries that I see, that they've gotten to where they are through power skills. And so I happen to be a mom. And so as I'm raising my kids, I'm thinking, gosh, these are skills that I also want my children to learn. So I think what you'll see with House of Saxons going forward is that we're actually going to expand our footprint to target middle school and high school young women who aren't being taught these really essential skills in school. And parents, they're so overwhelmed with all the things that as a parent, you're trying to keep up with schedules and this and that, that you're not thinking about, like, how am I building my daughter's self-esteem today? Those right. are questions that you as a parent want to be asking, but the reality is you're just trying to get everyone out the door on time and, et cetera. The other thing that I think a lot about is that the American school system is very, very focused on getting kids into college, but there's not a lot of talk about how are you going to survive or even thrive within a business environment long term? I mean, college is, 4 years, at 3, 4, 5 years, but your career spans decades. And right. so I think what you'll see with House of Saxons is us expanding into a space where we're empowering young women to basically acquire these business-minded skills quite early. In addition to things like STEM skills, I think you'll see us moving into to what does business etiquette look like? How do you purport yourself professionally? Things like that. So I think So we're also going to move into the direction of empowering more than just trafficking survivors. Trafficking survivors was and always will be the heartbeat of House of Saxons, mm-hmm. because that was really the inspiration for the mission. But the more I look around, the more I realize that so many of us are impacted by trauma. So many of us walk around with unseen trauma. And so I think we are all in some ways trauma survivors, and I don't want to restrict the goodness of House of Saxons, you know, to anyone. And so the next population I think you might see us focusing on are young women that really need these power skills to prepare themselves to thrive and run the world.
Right. I like how you call it power skills. And coming as someone with my background who worked with the Teen Girls Mentoring Program, I will definitely say it's needed. And they love it. You know, they just want to be able to ask questions, and guidance and direction is so important. So I like where you are now and where you're looking to go and expanding it, because we're in this day and age where mental health is so important. And if you grab a hold of those power skills really early, it does help you to grow and move on and become a better person as you move forward. So
100%.
What would you like to leave as your closing remarks for our listening audience? If you had anything you would like to say that I didn't ask, what would you like to say to our listening audience now?
I think, if I could end with anything, it would just be, I think the more I talk to people about what I'm doing, the more I realize how many people, most people really, are desperate to be of assistance, of help, to inspire, to impact others. And most of us just don't know how. And I think one of the things that has really helped me in trying to figure out how can I make a difference, how can I make a change in this life, you know, is thinking about my children's lives and my children's children's lives. So really thinking about what actions can I make today that are going to carry through to that second and third generation, because I think the next generation is much more focused on social impact than mine, and my generation is much more focused on it than arguably my parents' generation. But that said, I do think that it's really important to focus on ways. And for me, that way is skill building. But, you know, there are 100,000 other ways that you can create that intergenerational change. But I do think it's really important to think about the ways that we can empower people to really not just get through today or next week or next month, but to really thrive and to launch into a place that perhaps they weren't able to even envision themselves getting to. I think that dream building and that vision that, you know, people don't have for themselves, like that in and of itself is intergenerational change in the sense of really inspiring people to think about what is possible and then walking beside them to get them to that place. So I would say just, you know, as you're thinking about, you know, what can I do? How can I make a difference? Think about what's going to make the most impact in someone's life, you know, this generation and also for the next.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Saxon. It has truly been a pleasure speaking with you. And we are so delighted to have you as one of our Impact Best Alliance members. I think the sky is the limit of what you're doing. You're doing a great job, great initiative, and I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Thank you so much, Tanya. I'm thrilled to be a part of your incredible community, and thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Impact Best podcast, transformative global innovation in a new era of impact. Join us next week for another episode and become part of our Impact Best newsletter community, where you will receive all of the latest updates about our work in this new era of innovative impact finance. See you next week as we create the future of finance at Impact Best.